So what does a screening entail?
So the screening entails an ECG, and you'll be seen by a very top cardiologist from the UK. They come over with their team, and you'll have an ECG, and if they pick up anything on the ECG, they will move you straight to another room where they'll do an echocardiogram on your heart. And again, if they've detected anything there, you go and see the doctor immediately, and they give you your results there and then. So it's about a 20-minute process, unless you've gone through the second check. That could probably take up to 45 minutes, something like that. Mm. But anyone that comes in, they have their ECG. If everything's normal, they see the doctor, he tells them everything's fine, and off they go. Like I say, if there is anything detected, it can be dealt with. It might be a frightening kind of situation, but it will be found and it will be able to be treated, which is something that, you know, Craig never had. Mm. So the charity legacy that Craig has left is, you know, finding these problems. We've actually screened, I think it's over 9,500 people now we've screened, and over 360 have had problems. So it's a big number over the years, but all 360 have been seen and treated and, you know, are living normal lives.
Gosh, that's incredible. And obviously it is up to the age of 35, isn't it? So why is it that age range?
Yeah, so cardiac risk in the young are, they're classifying people over 35 as being old, really. I think once you start screening hearts of an older age, you are going to find more and more of the problems. And the actual problems that they're looking for are these hereditary defects as such. And, you know, Craig's was something called long QT, which at the time none of us have ever heard of. But as the years have gone on, we've found more and more people on the island with the same condition that, you know, could potentially just kill you at any stage. So we're glad we found them. But there could be many more out there, and we just want to keep screening to save lives, really.
So tell us a bit about Craig then and your relationship with Craig.
Craig was, my best mate. Fantastic footballer, everyone knew him for. Played with me at Corinthians for many years, and then unfortunately decided to leave and went to St George's because they were winning everything and he wanted to start winning. But he was a winner, and when he went to St George's, he immediately started smashing goals in left, right and centre. And unfortunately, he never had enough time there, really, at St George's. We did everything together, went on holiday every year, every night out in Jefferson's and Paramount and everywhere else. He was just full of life, bubbly, good looking. You know, everyone was jealous of Craig, that type of thing. Great at football. Then he'd pick a tennis racket up and he'd be great at that as well. You know, just anything he did, he was brilliant at. And he was just a great lad.
One of those guys that you love, but it's kind of hard being his friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, it just sounds wonderful. I'm really sad I never actually met him. And it was, I remember at the time when it happened, when we lost Craig, and it did just send waves out across the Isle of Man, didn't it?
Yeah, it was shocking. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I was at Ronald's Way watching, because I was injured. I was watching Corinthians play at Ronald's Way, and I got a phone call from a friend to say he hadn't turned up to his match for St George's against Colby. And then, you know, as the day went on, more and more phone calls and like frantic phone calls. And it's even to this day, it doesn't seem real. But to find out something like that, a fit and healthy young man at the age of 25 can just go to bed and not wake up. It took a lot to get over, and, you know, as I say, it still touches us all today.
But the incredible thing about it is that his friends and family, like yourself and his mum and everyone around, motivated and just put together this extraordinary charity which has quite clearly saved lives. And you've got this campaign underway at the minute, Defibrary, which, can I say, round of applause, fantastic name for a campaign, it's brilliant. And you're trying to raise money, aren't you, to get more defibs on the Isle of Man?
Yeah, so the public access defibs that we've been putting around the island are around about £2,000 for the defib and the outside casing. So we're trying to raise £20,000 to buy 10 of those and put them in loads of different places around the island, some quite remote places. We've already got a list now of people that have approached us and said, oh, what about here and what about there? So we go and assess and have a quick look around. And if we feel that, you know, that area needs one, then we'll put one there.
But the thing I didn't realise until the information came through about this, I hadn't even considered the fact that, of course, these are complicated bits of kit and they need to have maintenance and they need to be kept up, don't they?
Yeah, so the problem we have found with some of these public defibs is the guardians are taking responsibility, which is great. The pads and batteries do run out, and people have been replacing them, but they've just not been telling the ambulance service that they've replaced them. So as soon as the ambulance service see that the pads and batteries are out of date on their system, they will take it off the map, which means it won't be pointed to. You know, you won't be pointed into in the direction of that defib if it's not on their map, and it could be right next to you, but you don't know whether the pads and batteries are in date because the ambulance service don't have it on their record. So the appeal for defibrillary is not only to raise money, but it's also to raise awareness of where they are, who's in charge of them, and, you know, the upkeep of them is the most important thing, really.
So if someone does see one and they want to let you know, what's the best way of doing that?
Yeah, we want them to take a picture of it and upload it to our Facebook page or our Instagram or our Twitter, just any of our social media pages. Just upload it, say you've seen it in such a place, and we'll give you a bit more information on it. We'll check it's on the map. If it's not on the map, then we'll get in touch with the guardians to see why it's not on the map.
And should you ever find yourself in that really difficult situation where you are with someone who has maybe had a heart attack or has collapsed and there is a defib and you need to access it and use it, how easy are they to use? I mean, do you get sort of talked through it by the ambulance service?
You will get talked through it by the ambulance service, but also the machine itself talks to you. So as soon as you turn it on, it tells you to remove the clothes from the patient's chest, to stick the pads on, and there's a picture on there of where to stick the pads. So ideally, we want as many people as possible to be trained how to use these machines, but you can just pick one up in an emergency situation and use it on somebody. You can't do any damage with it. When we put them in the schools a few years back, we had to go and do a presentation to show them that the kids wouldn't be chasing each other down the corridor with these two pads. It will only shock if the heart is defibrillating, so that you can't just use it on a normal person and shock them. It will not. The pads themselves have they read the heart rhythm. So then you can, if it is defibrillating, you press the shock button and hopefully save a life. Yeah.
Incredible bits of kit, and it's just fantastic work that you all do at Craig. So thank you from us and all the Isle of Man for doing what you're doing. Just remind us again, Paul, where we can find out more about all of this.
Yeah, so our website is craigsheartstrongfoundation.co.uk, and then we are on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well.
The charity of the week.